This is a replay of the Tuesday night, February 13th, WGN show. We started at 11. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 2 hours to spend together. And I could say if it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's on mine. But a few things, including Paul wanted to talk about Times Square's record, the label, and the store and all that. We will. And a number of other things. And when you get into that story, it's such a web. It's interrelated to so many things. But we'll get there. But the other thing is I got one too many email in the last week about what happened at WJLX in Alabama, in Jasper, Alabama, outside of Birmingham. And I got to tell you, I've thought a lot about this, and I don't buy the guy's story. So if you've heard the story, and it's gone around the world, I'm sure that's the last thing the guy wanted to have happen. But supposedly, he got up and his grounds crew told him his 200-foot AM tower was just stolen. Gone. No remnant of it except for guy wires on the ground. Nothing. And not only that, but they broke in and they stole the transmitter too and everything else. And so what the guy did was filed with the FCC, firstly, for going silent on the AM, which, you know, he claims was vandalized overnight without his knowledge. And also he wanted to have his FM translator continue to broadcast without an AM station tied to it, which is against every FCC rule out there. And so it is that the FCC said, no, you're not going to do that. All right. Well, that probably would have been the end of the story if it hadn't gone viral. But now here's what I think. No, I do not believe that in the dead of night thieves toppled a 200-foot tower. That part is easy. Just cut the guy wires, they'll fall. But cutting it up and getting it out of there is no easy manner. And those are heavy. And on top of that, because you could cut it up ultimately, you know, into, say, 20-foot sections and all that. There's one road in and out. He could have made it to I-22 on several semis, you know, without anybody noticing. He's adjacent to Marjack Poultry. Actually, it's a pig farm there. Not likely, but okay. So here's what I think happened. Could be wrong, but it's just my conjecture. And that is that the guy probably had been broadcasting the translator, and by the way, that's the only thing that's advertised on his website at 101.5, I think. Nothing about an AM at all. Probably have been doing that for some time. And I think there's some Alabama engineers who are speculating over 5 years. But I don't know. I do know that I doubt he was regularly broadcasting on that AM. Most likely, he had been spooked. He knows that you can't run a translator without a primary station. And he was, I think. And so he concocted this story, as I say, hoping that, you know, they'd bless him with the right to continue to broadcast while he was clearing up this horrible theft. Well, of course, they said no. But interestingly, he says, I have no insurance whatsoever. Well, he might not have on the tower. That's theoretically possible. The idea that he had no business insurance is very unlikely. More likely, he was not going as far as committing insurance fraud to report a claim. I'd go with that. Now, apparently a lot of good-hearted Alabama broadcasters immediately said, well, you know, we can get you some equipment. You can do a long wire. You know, there's ways to do this very cheaply. No. I have to do a GoFundMe. I only want cash. Really. Oh, by the way, the owner, well, technically he was an owner of the station three owners ago, along with some other people, but he isn't now. If he is, well, that's another thing he hasn't bothered to share with the FCC. So I think that this was a plan to get his translator blessed, which didn't work. And along the way, it never occurred to him that this story would be so far-fetched that it would be picked up by news reporting agencies all over the world. Yeah, you name it. There's probably not a country on the planet that isn't talking about his theft of a 200-foot tower. So, as I say, and the transmitter and everything else. And by the way, if you're operating at a distance, the FCC regulations also require notification for if you're operating without direct operator control, notification if anything goes wrong with the transmitter or anything else. And so, theoretically, this guy found out through the grounds crew. Well, why wasn't he notified? So I think there's a lot of questions there, but I don't believe the story. Now, maybe I'll be wrong. I can't guarantee it. I'm not there. But I think that that we're going to find out that, yeah, he created this. And we'll see. All right. So that's what I think happened at WJLX. Just my guess. And so we'll see. By the way, if it did happen as he told it, he hasn't said a thing about the copper in the ground, which would be the most valuable part of the theft, and doesn't seem to be disturbed near as anybody would report. Nothing about that. And if it's not that, so if it's not theft, let's say it's vandalism. Some people say, well, maybe he was targeted and it's vandalism. Well, I wonder who he upset and why, because that's not a crime of opportunity. That's something that's well planned, if it's planned it at all, and it's quite targeted. So I don't buy it, though. I say that that in fact, he came up with this phenomenal story, and the only part of his plan that was completely foiled, other than the FCC not okaying it, is how far the story has spread. Of course, he's hearing this now, several people talking about it, and oh, no, this is an absolute theft. Well, we'll see. All right, so that's the deal there. Any speculation, I'd love to hear it, 888-876-5593. The saddest part of it is that throughout the country, there's many unscrupulous operators who are in fact, broadcasting original programming on a translator when it is not licensed as such. It's not a radio station. It's a secondary service, and all it can do is carry the programming of a fully licensed station, an AM or even an HD 2 or 3. So there you go. All right, then Paul wanted to know about Times Square Records. And like I said, I thought about this earlier. And the hardest part of telling the story is deciding what part of the story you want to start with and what you're going to involve. So I guess we got to start with Slim Rose, who had a little store, very little store, in the mezzanine of the subway at Times Square, Broadway and 42nd Street. You know, you walk down one flight of steps, then there's this little store, then you walk down the next flight and you go to the subway. And the little store was actually not a record store originally. It was what I'm trying to think of the word they used, tchotchke store. I probably slaughtered that pronunciation. But, you know, things like junk jewelry or, you know, I don't know. But in one corner, it had some records. Well, enter Jerry Green. Jerry Green at the time was, I guess, when he first walked in the door, 15. And, you know, Mr. Rose, I need a job, that kind of thing. And I'd like to work with your records. Well, one of the things he had suggested was, you know, put these records in the window rather than in the back. Well, it started to generate interest, but he wound up having some help, because what he did was he took one of the records, and there was a disc jockey on not a rated station, to say the least. It was one of the stations that was on the dial, and few people knew it at the time, Alan Fredericks. And, play this. Well, it got some interest. And next thing you know, Slim is selling records. In fact, within a year or so, he's selling records almost exclusively, more so than anything else. So that, we're going to leave Jerry Green right there for a minute, because he really was the kid who came in there and convinced Slim. But other people were looking at Times Square Record Shop at the same time. And one of them was Don Folletti and his friend Wayne Sterl. And what they had discovered was unreleased masters. and they found out that they could purchase them. And in particular, one of them was a group of masters of the nutmegs, and a group from Connecticut. And of course, you know, story untold, the hit and all that. But these were practice tapes. There was absolutely no hint of ever actually releasing these. And so they were able to buy them. And so they did. And what they went to, they go to Slim and they say, you know, you could re-release these. And Slim, by the way, heard him and said, they're pretty awful. And he, well, he probably was honest about that. But eventually he thought, well, okay. So now they have to find out a word for them. And this is so true. We all know about acapella and acapella without instrumentation, right? Just the vocal. Well, believe it or not, Slim Rose coined the phrase. He wanted to press the records and call them something, so he opened up a dictionary and found a cappella, a high-class term for operatic music without background. And so he said, well, then we have to use that. We have to make it a cappella. In other words, it was two words before, a and cappella. Put them together, and so all of a sudden a style is born, you know, and here come the first releases. So the original a cappella was practice tapes of the Nutmegs. All right, so this is Slim, who at this point doesn't really have a record label. That comes in 1961. And here comes Jerry Green again in the mix, because, of course, Jerry Green is always in the mix here. He's working at the store and all that kind of stuff. And it was Jerry, like I say, Alan Fredericks. His show was on WBNX in 1380 in New York City. Yeah. And ultimately, Slim Rose got a show there and swinging along with Slim. And, you know, it became kind of this cult thing. And in 61, they decide they're going to release records. And so it was that Jerry Green comes across a record that he had not heard, neither had anybody else, actually, as far as that goes. There is a moon out tonight by this group, the Capris. And he said, this is really good. And so ultimately it was the first record released on Lost Night, but I'll get to that. At that point, he wanted to re-release it. There was no distribution and all that. So he went to Herald to get it, released, which he did. And so Times Square Records is pretty much born on the strength of everything that's happening. And so interestingly, from 61 to 65, the shop moved in 63, a block away, but another subway middle stop. From 61 to 65, Times Square Records existed. And there's so many stories, but my favorite story is, some people say it's a legend. I tend to think it's a myth, but it's the story of Stormy Weather, and not the Lena Horne hit, the same song, but the deal was that a record collector had a 78 of a record that he'd never heard of, Stormy Weather. The flip side was Sleepy Cowboy. It was the Five Sharps. It was on Jubilee. And as far as that goes, no one had ever heard of this. So he brings it into Slim. You know, maybe you can sell this for me or whatever. And so Slim played it in the store and liked it. He liked the beginning of it, which we'll play for you. And he played it on his Sink or Swim with Swinging Slim on BNX. BNX, by the Woodstock, were brand new and excellent. But of course, they were only playing old records. But nonetheless... the story was that Slim's, pet raccoon set on it and broke it. The reality was that Slim broke it on the way home from the studio, broke under his arm. But nonetheless, so now he's got a problem. He's got this record, Stormy Weather. He doesn't know how many copies there are. He plays it on the air. And so he says, well, I'll get the record collector, Billy, another copy. And so he goes on the air and says, you know, anybody bring me a copy of the record? You have $5 in credit, and it goes to $10 in credit. Well, anyway, no one's coming forward, and the price is going up and up and up. And by 1962, Slim is offering over $200 in cash, and no takers. And so the deal is that some people thought, well, he made it up himself just to get collectors to go rummaging through garages and basements and bring him discs and all that. Well, at one point, somebody insists they've seen it on 45. Now, this is where the world ended for collectors, because now this becomes the Holy Grail, the 45 version of Stormy Weather on Jubilee from 1952. All right, so this would be a very early 45. And, of course, we know that the 78 existed because, you know, we've seen it. We've seen it through, you know, Slim. Not many places else. Nobody else is coming forward with it. And so at this point, he goes to Jerry Blaine. Jerry owned Jubilee Records. And he says, "You got to reissue the original." And Blaine said, "Well, there's a problem. Batch of 80 masters perished in a fire," or maybe it was a flood. But either way, the master didn't exist. The master had been destroyed. Now, by this time, it's like 1964. Jerry Blaine still has Jubilee Records, and he figures, I'll just get some other five sharps, because who are they anyway? So he gets some kids off the street, calls them the five sharps, has them record Stormy Weather on Jubilee as a 45. It's obviously not the same record. Now, meantime, Slim has already, on Times Square Record, beaten Jerry Blaine to the draw, because he'd released another bogus version of Stormy Weather on Times Square. In this case, he called it the Five Sharks. Yeah, KS instead of PS. Neither, by the way, made any inroads. So, bottom line is, this became, like I say, the Holy Grail, and there are people, you know, offering to pay tens of thousands of dollars for this, and everybody saying that, you know, they've seen it. Well, the reality is nobody had. Val Shively, for instance, we've talked about that, 5 million 45s under one roof, said, nope, never, ever saw it. And so the question is, did it exist? Well, one researcher who had access to Jubilee's files found evidence that it existed, if there really was one, because there was an entry for a record of 45 as Stormy Weather. But again, no one had ever seen this. And so, you know, we had no idea. Now, by the way, it was unlikely that there was a 45 in 52 anyway, because even though 45s had existed from, say, 1949 on, RCA came up with a format, the deal is, during the Korean conflict, there was a lot of shellac, but there was a shortage of vinyl. And the reason there was a shortage of vinyl was actually two-pronged. One was, the most important ingredient in a vinyl record is acetylene, which was an essential war product. Yeah. To compound this, there was a strike against the manufacturers of chlorine and chlorides, which were also vital in pressing. And so the Bakelite company, you remember Bakelite, they shipped most of the vinyl to record manufacturers, and they were worried. Well, if they were worried, the record companies were worried. And so a lot of things that maybe had a catalog entry were never actually pressed. And that's probably what happened to this 45. It's unlikely this record was ever pressed, except, now here's where it gets weirder. There was a very respected collector, and she was in the business, and she was a writer and a researcher, Marcia Vance. If you're an oldies fan, certainly you've read articles by Marcia Vance. She claimed that she saw a copy of the 45, Stormy Weather, owned by a Jubilee saxophonist and band leader, Alonzo Lucas. And she said, "It's authentic. I know where he would get it. I have no explanation as to why he had it, but..." And when Marcia told this story, she said, "You can't tell this story until I'm dead." And so it was that, sadly, she died in 1988. And there are some. The problem is, Buddy Lucas has been dead since 1983. So long before Marcia died, the record disappeared. So did it ever exist? Probably doubtful, but you'll hear it right after the news. And by the way, you'll wonder what all the hoopla is about. I wouldn't give him a dollar for this, but you'll hear Stormy Weather and a little more about Slim Rose and your calls coming up on WGN Radio.
There's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is, the original 1952 version of Stormy Weather by the Five Sharps, a 78 on Jubilee that Slim Rose on Slim's show played in 1961, and everyone's looking for the 45, but there is none, what you're talking about. It actually was about 6 months to a year earlier on the radio that Jerry Green, I mentioned Jerry was a teenager working for Slim, and he had a deal going where people could bring in their old records for credit, you know, kind of like a trading deal. And someone had brought in a record he'd never seen before. It was on the Planet label, and it was called There's a Moon Out Tonight. And he played it and thought, this is darn good. And so he goes over to Alan Fredericks, and at the time, Alan Fredericks was on WHOM. And Saturday night it was, I think it was called like the Night Beat Show or something. But in any event, he brings it in, he plays it, and he says, I will give you $1 credit for any copy turned into the store. Well, instead of copies coming in, he got within a week about 100 requests to buy the record. And so now he's really intrigued. He goes over to Planet Records, which, you know, is basically a nothing by this point. And they say, yeah, well, we got some around. And one kid bought 10 copies, and then another kid bought 10 copies. And after that, they were out of stock. Now, what was interesting, Jerry Green being one of the kids, the label said, well, we'll sell you the masters for $200. And Jerry said, that'd be great. But he also said, we'll throw in the publishing rights for $10, and Jerry Green passes on it. I guess he didn't have an extra 10, so he didn't get the publishing rights. So meanwhile, $200, and they press a few hundred copies on a label that they have invented at this point. And they're using red vinyl, and Slim Rose used to like colored vinyl too. But anyway, they put it on Lost Night. Now, at this point, there is no Lost Night. It's just this. But the copies that they printed, the 200 copies, were like snapped up immediately. Demand was still high. But at this point, the kids were intelligent enough to realize that they had absolutely no way to distribute a record nationwide. They were clueless. So they go to Hi Weiss. And Hi Weiss, of course, has Old Town Records. Says, yeah, kids, I'll put it out. And he does. Puts it out as Old Town 1094. It goes to number 3 nationally. Now, what's interesting is by this time, the Capris completely broke up because nothing was happening with them. Well, after the success of this, they get to get together. And now, so we have Slim, who realizes, man, this reissue stuff is really going to work for me. And so he starts Times Square Records in 1961. And the first thing that he presses is the Time Tones, and we'll be playing that that coming up. Meanwhile, Jerry Green and his friend Jared Weinstein decide, we're going to do something with this Lost Night. So they go down to Philadelphia, and just like Jerry knew Alan Fredericks in New York, he said, I got to find someone in Philadelphia. Well, they do, of course. It's Jerry Blavitt, as you can imagine. And so they start a record store, the Record Museum, and it was in a hole in the wall on Chestnut Street downtown, and specializing in oldies, just like, you know, Slim, same kind of model. And they were buying ads on Blavitt's radio shows, and they decided, let's start reissuing stuff, and hence Lost Night. Well, it worked for There's a Moon Out Tonight, so why not? And Crimson. And so by this time, Jerry Blavitt invested a 50% interest in this. And so they didn't release albums at first. That didn't come until 64. But they did release a bunch of 45s. And the first one, like I say, was There's a Moon Out Tonight. All right, so that we're going to leave Jerry Green at Collectibles, and I'll tell you what, later it's Collectibles, but at Lost Night, and Jerry Blavitt too, and Slim. And we'll pick it up there, because yes, there's absolutely more to our story. Because we're going to talk about oldies compilation albums. And if you're saying, well, was Lost Night the first? No. It was Times Square? Not even close. Yeah. Well, Roulette, they came up with a lot of, you know, Golden Goodies album. Was it Roulette? No, not by a long shot. Yeah, we'll get to who was first. And you may know, but you really probably won't know who was second. All right, so we'll do that. But in the meantime, Lisa is in Dundee. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh.
How's it going?
I'm sorry to interrupt this interesting
that's fine
story you're telling for what's on my mind, but Sunday I watched a really great documentary on Don Rickles.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure if he's one of your favorites or not.
Well, by the way, I got to interrupt you and say that he ties into what I'm talking about, because Jerry Blavitt, when he was a kid, was his valet, was Don Rickles' valet.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Well, that's good then. I am participating.
Yeah.
I've always liked him, but what I enjoyed about the documentary was that they interviewed just everybody from, you know, mm-hmm. all facets of work and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just loved him. Everybody,
yes.
you know, nobody had a harsh thing to say.
Yes.
And that was because even the comedians were saying, you know what, he was funny, you know, and the people, just the regular people, wanted to sit down front because they wanted to get picked on.
Right.
And I just was so sad when that was over because I thought it's just not like that today.
You
have to be so afraid
yeah.
of what you're going to say.
Oh, absolutely.
What feelings you're going to hurt. And I just don't know how we went from him, you know, back in the 60s and everything, although he was very funny all the way up. I don't know if it's because he made fun of everybody. And, you know, comedians aren't going to be funny to everybody. That I understand. But he didn't offend people, you know, like people are getting offended today. And I just wondered what your thoughts were and why do you think we're so far away from that? Not all of a sudden, probably.
Yeah,
but
that, of course, is the pendulum, and I'll get to that. But, you know, if I had to guess, I think part of it is that unseen reality that deep down inside, Don Rickles was a good guy and a good-natured guy, yeah. good-hearted guy. People liked him. Now, a lot of people, when he started, thought that he was just an imitator of Jackie Leonard. But the reality is that Jackie Leonard didn't even influence Rickles' style. According to Rickles, he had credited Milton Berle, if anybody, as to a style. But what really broke him out was Murray Franklin's. Murray Franklin's was a little nightclub on Miami Beach, and he was working there early in his career in the 50s, and he spotted Frank Sinatra. And he said, saw your movie, The Pride and Passion. Want to tell you, the Cannon's acting was great. And so, make yourself at home, Frank. Hit somebody. And, well, Frank Sinatra thought this was hilarious. His nickname for Don Rickles was Bullethead. And what happened was Frank came out of Murray Franklin's and just loved him and said, you got to go see this. And so it was Sinatra who got him into headlining in Las Vegas. And, you know, it was Sinatra that he got involved with, you know, Dean Martin, and he did that celebrity roast stuff and all that. So yeah, but yeah, he poked fun at everybody as far as that goes.
It turns out, too, he was a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize all the things he had been in.
Yeah.
They touched on all this on the documentary.
Yeah, like...
And you got to meet his wife. Like you said, he was so nice.
Yeah, no, you know? Absolutely. And, yeah, the one of those Clark Gable, Burt Lancaster, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff, and he played a part on Get Smart briefly, and all sorts of things. So yeah, and he did those beach party movies. Oh my God!
Yes,
and on and on. But he was just a good guy, and he was funny. He absolutely was funny. And so I think that it was a combination of all that kind of stuff. And his wife was from Philadelphia, actually, and she was
great too. In this, you know, you could see why he was attracted to her,
right?
You know, because she wouldn't give him any, you know,
right.
And there was one little bit in the documentary about he was such great friends with Bob Newhart, and Bob's wife Ginny was saying to Bob, you know, she's never met anybody as nice as Don and blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, honey, they were in line to go see his show for the first time for her. And he said, well, you're going to see a little different side of him, you know, tonight. But just to remember how sweet he is, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, and that was a long, long marriage. One of their children died, actually. I think the guy was
Don Rickles?
Yeah, they had
two children.
Yeah, and one of them died like at 4 years old.
You don't even picture him being married. I've never even thought about it, really.
Oh, yeah. No, and actually it makes sense to me because I think there are a number of people like that who their public persona is absolutely nothing like their private life. And his private life was solid. I don't think Barbara died until a year or two ago. You know, they'd been married like, over 50 years, a lot over 50 years. So No, but I know she passed in the last couple of years.
And, you know, he made fun of his his manager, his band leader, everybody,
yeah.
you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And they were all with him for 40 years, 20 years. I mean, people would just not stay with him if he was,
No, people,
you know,
people love the guy. Absolutely love the guy.
But why, how did we change then? Everything being so offensive to everybody, and
all of that. I think there's a giant pendulum on some level, and I think that we go back to a period of time, like we can go to the 50s when Jack Parr got censored for saying WC. He didn't even say water closet.
No,
he just said WC,
right.
And the network's kicking him off the air. I mean, this is utter insanity. And you know, so we've gone from that now to on the one hand, anything goes, and we were seeing that for a while, where virtually people were saying things that were just, you know, I won't say upsetting, but downright disheartening, to say the least. And now we've come to the deal that, oh my God, if you say anything, you're hurting somebody in some way. So, you know, this will eventually even out. But where we are right now is in that very weird swing where, you're afraid to insult anybody for anything. And of course,
right. I mean, all of a sudden those 7 words you can't say on TV.
Well, yeah, it's become 17, didn't it?
all 7 you've heard before, sure.
Well, of course. and of course, most of what people are going after today has nothing to do with George Carlin's 7 and everything to do with allegedly upsetting a group, be it a woman or a minority or what have you. So
we could loop in Lenny Bruce, too.
Oh, God.
He wasn't as bad as half of what we see, on, you know.
Well, right, and that was a very different time, and boy, they were arrested.
And people were paying to see him, so how could he be?
Oh, I know. I know. I agree. I share your angst, and, you know, it's actually a very serious subject, and I don't want to get into it on this show.
No, I know. I was afraid almost to bring it up. But
yeah, but,
if anybody out there likes him,
yeah,
look at this. Check out this documentary.
Sounds good.
It's on Freevee right now, which is free.
Okay. I'll do that myself. You know, I'll have John download for me. All right. Thanks.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Take care.
All
Bye.
Right. So, yeah, it ties into what we're talking about with Lost Night and all that because, like I say, Blavatt started out as his valet. And then he was also the road manager for Danny and the Juniors. So not bad for a kid in high school. All right. So we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. James, well, 1961, that was the start of Times Square Records with the Time Tones, mixed racial group, and that was an interesting story, too. All right, so we'll maybe get to more about that, and I promise we'll talk about compilations, because I know that was originally what Paul was interested in, and no Lost Night, Times Square, any of those, they were not the first, and neither was Roulette. A lot of people have thought that. That came actually considerably later in our story, but we'll tell you who was, because I think that it will surprise you. We'll also get to Joe, a first-time caller. Oh, in fact, it says right on, the Time Tones song. All right, so Joe, don't go away. If you will hang on for me, we will talk about the Time Tones right after the news. See, I was going to gloss over that and In My Heart and so much more, but we won't. We'll pick that up with Joe, a first-time caller, coming up after the news right here on WGN Radio. Something's gone very wrong there, and I'm not 100% sure what, so I'm just going to move this over and try it again because, you know, it's important that we give the Time Tones the credit they're due here. It was on ATCO, actually. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. And those are the time tones. And in some releases, two words, time and tones. In other words, one word, time tones. Either way, Irving Rose of Times Square Record name them after they actually won a contest. So that was the deal. But I see Joe is a first-time caller, and she's in Orland Park, Illinois. So what do you know about the time tones? Joe. Oh, no, Joe's hung up. Joe didn't hang in there. Oh, this is terrible, because she knows something about the time tones, and I don't know enough, that's for sure. It was interesting, though, because they overnight were starting to do something, and of course, they were on Times Square Record, but that, also in 1961, was on ATCO. So I don't know. We'll get back to those compilation albums, which may not be what you think. Then again, I don't know. Maybe it will. But in the meantime, absolutely interrupt the show for whatever's on your mind, and we'll see what Eduardo in Tampa has to say for his bad self. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Robbie. Yeah, I was going to talk about San Diego here in a moment, but do you have a P.O. box where people send you stuff?
P.O. Box 977. And that's Miami, Arizona. And the zip code is 85539.
Okay, P.O. Box 977, Miami, Arizona, 85589.
85539.
39, okay.
Yep.
85539.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to see you a couple of these. They're about 3x3 of what... real beaches look like.
Oh, okay.
Back in the, black and white.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, definitely send it out your way.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to talk about San Diego. So apparently they're getting this transboundary sewage from Mexico, and this is going into San Diego, and people are not going into Imperial Beach.
Yeah, Imperial Beach is the IB is the town right on the border with Tijuana, and it's always a minor problem. But the problem is that the rains have caused it to be a major problem as far north as like Coronado Island, and so you're.
Oh
talking,
yeah,
I heard something like
recently,
it was like 15 billion gallons of sewage, and the bottom line is there's 2 million people in Tijuana, and they don't treat that sewage; they just send it out to sea. And, you know, that's the way it is. Normally, it isn't that big a problem, but right now it is a health hazard, to say the least. And, you know, there are many people on the TV news who are saying it's about as bad as it's ever been, but I don't know what you do with it.
Yeah. I'm watching these birds just like on the water here, so this is this is not environmentally good.
No, it's a disaster, and it's a double thing, because you not only have the Pacific Ocean, but you've also got the Tijuana River, and so this is a disaster. And long before this, there were articles in the paper. You can look at it over the years and the months and all that. You know, they'd been worried about just this happening, and what's interesting is, in the past, San Diego had been fined for sewage spills. Well, at this point, yeah, they claim there's federal help, but you know, they claimed that 6 months ago, and I have not seen much yet. So I don't know. What do you do?
They've gotten money, but now they're requesting more money. So I guess
Where does it go? Right, where
Does
it go? Who are we sending this money to?
Yeah.
You know,
it was like 200 before, and now they want like 100 more, and so it's a money thing that gets thrown in there.
Well, it seems to me, if we're sending this money to Mexico, and I don't know if we are, that we'd be better off spending it and building it ourselves, whatever needs to be done. But, you know, this is obviously past the scope of this show, but I will say that, IB, and, you know, and to be honest with you, IB, nobody's really going to bitch that much. It's Imperial Beach, so what? But, man, you infect Coronado, now you got people up in arms.
Yeah, and you got the Navy SEALs that are nearby, right?
Yeah.
There's a training.
Well, that's Coronado, yes, is naval. And then if you go a little further, you've got one of the biggest Marine bases ever. You know, that's Camp Pendleton. But that's further north.
Right.
That's by Oceanside. But, yeah, the Navy absolutely has a presence on Coronado Island. So, yeah, there's, but I mean, there's also very, very pricey homes on Puerto Rico, on Coronado. So, the naval base is, sort of at the tip of it. You can see it on a map, and that, but like I say, you got some influential people in those houses in Coronado Island. So I would think that, they're none too pleased.
Yeah. They're interviewing the mayor of that area.
Oh, yeah, and then, you know, you got Chula Vista. But again, do people care about Chula Vista? Well, you know, I think that Coronado will be much better at yelling, and even National City, you know, that doesn't matter. But then I shouldn't say that, you know, because it does, obviously, anytime anybody's living anywhere. But looking at it in terms of influence, I would think that Coronado is the big one. That's where a lot of influential people are going to say, stop this now.
Oh, yeah. You definitely bet on that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm hoping for anyway, because to people in IB, they've been complaining about it for a long time, but, you know, who's listening? Well, they'll listen to Coronado, I think.
Yeah. Hey, I hope that, I don't know if you're going to make or want to make a comment on this, but the 7-year-old from the shooter in the Joe Osteen in Houston, hopefully they're going to, it's a disabled child, hopefully the child's going to be able to pull through.
Yeah. If
they caught a gun wound.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's just horrible. You know, and that 7-year-old shot there, and there were a couple people injured. Somebody else as well. I don't know what the deal was on that, but there were two people who were hurt. And so
the grandmother was saying that it was kind of like the right decision for the police to make, but it was unfortunate because I have never seen such a weird thing come out like that, where they're going to actually take like your son or daughter with you to do this. It's just weird.
Well, right.
Never seen that.
Right. Well, and we've gotten to a point, just like we were talking with Lisa earlier, we've gotten to a point where the world as we know it went crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're
going to
make it. Yeah, hopefully.
Well,
let's
absolutely.
Keep them in their prayers.
And yeah, you just these are things that I would consider under the headline of unconscionable. You know, I'd hate to think we ever got to a point where this was business as usual. So
yeah,
you know, you'll hear this done six ways to Sunday on every political talk show in the world. So I'll stay away for it. But it's there's many different facets of this. But I think what we're really talking about also is a mental health issue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the main thing out of it coming out of this. Yeah.
Right.
Mental health. Yeah.
Right. So the other things that have been brought up become almost negligible, you know. I mean, you got to be crazy to do this, but this is a special kind of crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Maybe I'll call on Thursday.
I'm counting on it. All right. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. So 888-876-5593. Full show tomorrow, by the way. And we are in the first hour. We're going to have Steve Probst on. I'll ask him about stormy weather, too. Maybe he has more insight into that 45 that I say does not exist. But we'll find out. And we will find about those oldies compilation. And we'll get to Leah and Marcus Hook about Don Rickles. And your calls are welcome on WGN Radio.
Confidential as a church at twilight. Sentimental as a rose in moonlight. My love for you will always be confidential to me. Confidential as a mother's prayer. Too beautiful for other eyes to share. My love for you will always be confidential to me. Our love's a precious secret, a beautiful thing apart. There is no need for a crying eyes to look into my heart. Confidential as a baby's cry, secret and moving as a lover's sigh. My love for you will always be.
WGN Radio, I'm Robert James. Confidential, 1956 on Vita Records. And actually, that was on the first compilation album. And we'll talk about that this hour. I promise I won't let the hour go without going through that, because I know I left people waiting there. Got some requests by email. All right, so Leah and Marcus Hook, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Thank you, Raleigh. How are you?
I can't complain. How about yourself?
Oh, good. It snowed today, so I'm happy.
Oh, very good. Enough to actually stick? Is it a nice coating?
No. It's going to melt, I think, but, you know.
Yeah.
It was the wet, heavy snow, so.
Yeah.
But it was nice while it lasted.
Well, good.
And you were right about my thing, that the pulmonary thing. I went to the doctor, and she did order an echo, so I'm going to have that on the 28th.
Okay. And I assume that she's not terribly worried, though.
No.
I don't.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No.
But good to have that. That'll be a good baseline.
Yeah. I just wanted to add, well, first of all, I'm glad Lisa called, because first of all, she didn't mention the name of the documentary, did she?
Nope.
I'd love to know the name of it and where she saw it. But
let me look it up. Maybe something will come up if I put this in a search. I don't know. Don Rickles documentary. Well, there's one from 2007. That's not it. Mr. Warmth. I don't think so anyway. Mr. Warp is a 2007 project. Okay, there's probably another one, but now here's another.
You said
one.
It was a new one.
Yeah, I think so. But then there was a Bob and Don, a love story, a short documentary about Bob Newhart and Don Rickles. I don't know. So Lisa,
well, maybe she calls in tomorrow night. She can say the name and where she saw it. But,
absolutely right. I want to hear that.
I wanted to add my two cents my dad worked with Don Rickles a lot, and Milton Berle, and I think the I don't think it's so much that the pendulum has swung the other way. I think that what Don Rickles had was finesse, and I think that's what the comics are lacking today.
Oh no, I agree with that, but I also agree with now we're at a fever pitch where people are upset and offended by things that were heretofore accepted.
But I think also there's a crudeness to the comedy today that Don Rickles didn't have.
Oh right,
I mean,
right.
He used similes and things like that to couch insults. And they don't do that today. They just come right out and they're just very crude today.
No.
You know?
I think Lisa's comments extended well beyond comedians or performers in terms of just in general. We are at a point in society where, everybody's...
Oh, okay. I thought she was just talking about comedians.
No, where everybody's feelings are hurt. But she's calling back, and I wonder whether it's this Judd Apatow, Don Rickles and Bob Newhart, the love story. But hang on. Don't go away. In fact,
okay.
I'll leave you right there. I don't have to say hang on. I can just work the wonders of the phone system and... Or try to, anyway, and bring on Lisa in Dundee. So, all right, Lisa, is it the Judd Apatow thing?
No, I think it could be the 2007.
Oh.
Because they did use Mr. Warmth a lot.
Then that's probably it.
I didn't really pay attention to the title. It was. I found it on Freevee.
Okay.
Oh, it's, Freevee,
which
I have
is a
that
streaming
channel.
Service, so it's free.
Yeah.
And Freevee is now part of Max, which encompasses HBO. But you can have Freevee without having HBO.
Yeah, so it's Mr. Warmth, the Don Rickles project.
That's probably it.
Yeah, I have Freevee on disc. Yeah.
Okay, so now there you go.
Great. Thank you, Lisa.
Okay,
all right, appreciate it. All right,
I'm
good deal.
Hang up.
Yeah,
okay,
thanks.
Bye.
All right, so now we know, and that will we'll say goodbye to Lee if I can actually do this. I see what I did. Oh, yeah, hang on a minute. Don't go away. I'm surprised that worked just now, because what I did was I put Lisa and Leah on the same phone bank, and that absolutely should not have worked. So I am going to try to hang up on, I've done it now, on, all right. So let's see if I can possibly do this. I'll put Leah on hold. Don't tell me. No, I hung up on both of them. All right, Leah, that's right. I just blew the whole thing. You can call me back. Yeah, it's this elaborate phone system that's supposed to allow me to do everything, but that was absolutely operator error guaranteed. We'll get to Jim in Wisconsin, James on the South Side, but I'll get to compilation albums, and I'll finish that, I promise, coming up next on WGN Radio.
There's a moon out tonight. Whoa, 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 moon. Let's go strolling. There's a girl in my heart. Whoa, 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 moon. Whose heart I've stolen. There's a moon out tonight. Let's go strolling through.
The Capris, there's a moon out tonight. No, that's not the original Planet version. And as I say, that was Jerry Green on Lost Night before he even turned it into a label, when he was still working for Slim Rose in November 1960. Put it out, couldn't obviously make it nationally, so he went to High Weiss at Old Town and they distributed it. The rest was history. But Jerry got a taste of being a reissue label and left Slim and went to Philadelphia, as I mentioned, started Lost Night. And I think April of 61, they put out the Visions and then the Veltones, then Lee Andrews and the Hearts, and on it went. But I think when Paul wrote to me asking about reissues, it was less about 45s, and we could get into Relic and everybody else on 45s as much as albums. And that's an interesting story when you look at the compilation albums, because everybody thinks that, well, you know, could it have been Times Square? No, absolutely not. Could it have been collectibles, or shall I say Lost Night? No. In fact, they didn't get into albums until 64. The first one was a Lee Andrews and the Hearts Greatest Hits, and then it was a Jerry Blavitt album. They did a lot of compilations with disc jockeys, Jerry Stevens and many, many others, but Joe Niagara, High Lit, all that. But in any event, when it comes to those compilations, the first one was Art LeBeau. Yeah, he coined the phrase oldies but goodies, started Original Sounds Records in 1957, put out Oldies but Goodies Volume 1 in 1958, and that's what started it. But as I go back, I think, because I've been asked this question before, who did the first rock and roll compilation album? And the reality is you can look at it in three ways. One is compilations that are put together as samplers by an individual record company, like a Capitol in the 50s would do for, just for variety albums and things like that, EMI. Then there were compilations branded by third parties, such as the Lucky Strike, this or that, whatever. And then the label compilations for sale to the public, which I think is what we're talking about here. And like I say, Oldies But Goodies was the first one. And that was volume one was in 58. And then they went on through a dozen or so volumes, more probably. As far as the next label to do a series like that, it wasn't Roulette. And a lot of people would say, oh, it'll be that Golden Goodies on Roulette. But that series actually did not start Golden Goodies until late 62. And then, of course, within a year or so, Original Winners, that 22 Original Winners series on Roulette, also a good series of albums. But that was, more like 64. Now, if you go back, after Art LeBeau, the first label to, in earnest, start releasing compilations in a series was Liberty. And that was 1960 with original hits. And they had several of those volumes. But now here's the argument. Levy actually did something before that, but it wasn't a series. And that was Rock and Roll Record Party. And that had the Crows and the Cleftones and Frankie Lyman. And it, arguably, that was the labels that he picked up from George Goldner. So they were in-house to that extent. But and they had done other stuff that wasn't top 40 before that. But so it would be Art LeBeau followed by Liberty as far as series. And then you pick up Roulette. Now, the X factor there is Mercury did a series as well. And I've got those, but I don't know the years on that. I gotta look for that. And of course, then getting into the game like Lost Night did in earnest of having compilations in disc jockeys' names. Roulette started to do that too with the 22 original winners series. They would brand it with a variety of different radio stations. You know, WFUN presents 22 original winners or what have you. And so there were a lot of those. And then you start to get into Post and several other people as well. But that's it pretty much for compilations and on and on and on. But so I don't know if Paul has any further questions, but if he does, he can ask me. All right, so there you have it. 888-876-5593. Jim is in Wisconsin. What's up tonight, Jim?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Always.
I just wanted to say that I've never met anyone with such wonderful knowledge that you have.
It's limited. Thank you. But it's very telegraphed. What I don't know about is voluminous, trust me.
Right. I've been listening to you every night for a while, and I called you about Jim Steinman before, but I apologize for that. What I wanted to say is I've listened to radio. I'm 70 years old, and I've listened to radio all my life. And I remember when Bob Surratt was on FM, he was the first star of FM.
Uh-huh.
I remember Larry Lujack.
Sure.
I remember Barney Pipp.
Oh, yes.
I remember, I remember the war between WLS and CFL. Uh-huh. When we were teenagers, we would have our handheld transistor radios.
Yeah, yeah.
We would switch back and forth to get a better song. What I was wanting to say, you have such incredible knowledge, and I would hate to have it lost.
Oh.
I really wish that Ken Burns would get involved
with you.
and do a documentary on what you know and what people don't know. There's a lot of songs you've been playing that I've never heard before, and there's a lot of knowledge on who was the original and who was the ones that copied and all that, and I think that should be done.
I really do. That's very nice of you to compliment you. I agree with you from the standpoint of that needs to be done, but the guy that they should be interviewing is Val Shively, who has over 5 million 45s under one roof. This is the guy who knows it all. And I know they've done a few documentaries on him, nothing nationwide that's done anything, but I mean, I would defer to his knowledge on every one of these things.
Well, I think they should do you both.
That's very kind of you. But I'll certainly watch whatever they do, but I don't plan to star in it.
Right, but I really think so, because I've seen all of his documentaries and his country music ones and all the other, but no one knows more than, in my knowledge, than you do.
Well, I'm humbled by that. I don't know that it's true, but I do agree with you on one thing. There are so many facets of this that as soon as I and several other people that I might know pass, this information will be lost forever. And I hate to know that, but it is true.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, it will be. And, you know, I assume that's been the case since the beginning of time. What we don't know probably is so much greater than what we do that it's just the way of the world. But that's why when I wrote my little book, I put some stories in there that you just don't see anywhere else, particularly about the Paola hearings.
Well, yes, I remember those.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, you know, there are things that never came out that I did put in print.
So. And please stay healthy.
Well, that's so kind of you. I'll try. You too, and call me again soon.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, yes. Can use all the callers I can get, and love every one of you for that. So I had a couple of people say, you've got patience. No, I've got gratitude is what it is. I'm grateful to everyone who calls this radio show because it makes it easier for me to do. And I'll tell you what, I always opt for easier. James on the South Side has stories, and I promise to play something else from one of those compilation albums coming up on WGN Radio. Or not. All right, so I'll just continue to prattle on and talk. I don't know where Adam went, but that's all right. We'll catch up with him later. And
I'm here.
Oh, now he says, no, I'm back. All right, so he's back, and I will be soon on WGN Radio. James, a little peanut, a little roofie, a little meatball. What have they got going on in New Haven? That's where the Carnations were from originally. They're known for that 1961 recording. It was on Lesquet, and it probably sold three copies. But then, you see, what happened was, 4 years later, 1965, Lost Night picked it up and re-released it. And yes, many of us fondly remember the Carnations and a little meatball. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, I was thinking about what Lost Night 45 could I play that's really out there? And I thought of things like Be Fair by the Galahads. And then I figured Fran will go nuts with that. Can't do that one. So then I thought, okay, the Carnations. Yeah, that's about as good as it gets. And yeah, I should finish that story to say, ultimately, Jerry Blavitt sold his interest in Lost Night. Now, what was interesting in the paperwork, it was sort of like what happened with VJ and the Beatles, where EMI didn't take the Beatles back, and then they hit, and VJ released the album. Well, same kind of deal here, where they didn't include Crimson Records, and right after they bought Jerry Blavitt out, here comes the Soul Survivors and Express What Your Heart on Crimson, and here goes Jerry, I'm a partner. And yes, he was. So ultimately, though, they turned Lost Night, Jerry Green did, into collectibles. And he got not only into records, but heavily into VHS and DVD and all that kind of stuff. And then he was prescient. When the internet was first in its infancy, he nabbed the domain oldies.com. And of course, for years operated that. He since sold it. He and Nina, his wife, are retired, and she has not been in good health. And so he's been dealing with that. But yeah, Jerry's still very much with us in Philadelphia. So, all right. Okay, so 888-876-5593. Now, Fran in Austin has a request. Well, I didn't play Be Fair, so that's one. What else?
Which one was that?
Be Fair. You remember.
Did I request that?
No, that's the one I said you'd go nuts if I played it.
Oh, no, I know which one you're talking about. Is that the one with the...
Blind guy and his girlfriend are crossing the street. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the, oh, God,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I would never request that.
No, but it's a Lost Night record, so when I was thinking of what horrible Lost Night records can I play, it came to mind.
Oh, okay. I was wondering where that came from, because
yeah.
I haven't heard you play that. Usually you play that when it's the world's worst
yeah, right, right, to prove that
somebody wants to hear, you know, Blind Man in the Bleachers or something.
Oh, God. And, you know, I'll take that record over Blind Man in the Bleachers.
I don't know which one's worse. The other one is like the guy is really, I don't know.
I believe that word would be smarmy. But
yes. Yeah, anyway.
So things you do want to hear. What do you want to hear?
What I'd like to hear is Pretty Words by the Shirelles.
Yeah, sure. Okay, writing that down, Shirelles. Okay, hopefully tomorrow night.
Okay, and I had those oldies but goodies.
Oh, the Art LeBeau, on original
sounds. Yeah, I had a couple of those. Man, I wish I'd get my hands on them again.
Probably could. But, you know, they're all available on CD, but you probably could get the albums on eBay fairly cheaply.
Yeah, but. I just got to get all that set up. Got to get a USB turntable.
Well, yeah, God, I know. Perish the thought, but yes, absolutely, and that will work. And but they're also, like I say, every one of those volumes is out on CD as well.
Oh, that's good to know. I'll look them up.
Yeah, plus more. I mean, Art LeBeau was nothing if not prolific. There are a lot of those.
Yeah, I only had, and I listened to them over and over again. Well, then I got them on tape.
Right.
And the tapes broke. I wore them out.
So do you remember which volumes you had?
I can't remember. I know one of them had Gee Whiz.
Okay.
It had a couple of Chantel's things on. Trying to remember one of the Chantel's songs that I happened to know, and then I, you know, learned about more of them through Scotty and this show. And you know.
Well, Gee Whiz was on Volume 8. And so, I know there should be something, and I could probably look up what else was because I remembered that. But Mockingbird was on it, and Searching, and This Time, and Leaving It All Up to You, and Chapel of Love, and Splish Splash, and Suspicion, and In the Mood, and La Bamba, Raunchy, and Lover's Island.
I had a couple of other ones. I can't. It's been so long.
Oh, of course. But that was Volume 8.
Yeah. So. Sure. Yeah, I'll have to try to find those again. Those were so great.
Yep, you can. I'm sure every one of them is on CD.
All right.
Yep, so check it out, Original Sound Records.
Yeah, I'll be looking for them.
All right, good deal. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Raleigh.
Okay, bye. All right, yeah, so all that stuff is. I've got the CDs, but of course, you know, vinyl is final as far as I'm concerned. That's the best stuff. Yeah, just sounds better. Pops, clicks, and all that. James on the South Side and has 4,832 stories. How's it going, James?
Fine. How are you?
Well, I'm here.
Thank
and
you.
Sitting up. I'm erect.
Taking my call.
Always. So thank you for the 9 zillion stories.
Yeah, some of them basically the homeowner who rented out a room to we won't get into the political implications.
Yeah.
But let's just say her act of kindness was not reciprocated.
Oh, there's a lot of them. We got a raped 10-year-old girl who met her attacker online. Just lovely. I mean, just lovely. They're just horrible. So tell me the ones that are either funny or that you liked.
Okay, there was like the one where they found the kid that had been missing for some time.
Mm-hmm.
That made my day.
Yeah.
That did.
Right.
Okay.
Good.
There was one where apparently this it had something. I'm trying to think what. Basically, this person was criticizing this waitress, I think it was.
Oh, yes. Where you're dissing her, and she paid the tab and the note and all that. That was great. But my favorite of the night, and we're coming quickly coming to a close, was the 13-year-old accepted into medical school.
Oh, so, yes.
That was wonderful story. And Alina Wicker, a 13-year-old prodigy. And she, you know, I love the idea of online education. I think it's the answer for so many, many people. And so, sure enough, she's gotten into the Hearsink School of Medicine at University of Alabama as a partnership between the medical school and others. And she'll get her tuition paid for. And she's 13 years old.
Yeah, that is. Okay, but you know, there's so many kids who just don't either, they don't get encouragement, or they just simply they're just simply left to, and really, okay, when you think about it, if they were just, I mean, now, okay, with the encouragement and that sort of thing.
Well, that the other thing, of course, is when you're talking about online education, for many of these kids, you need somebody at home to make sure the kids are doing it. But she's enrolled both in ASU and in Oakwood, and she's doing separate undergraduate degrees, and her passion is STEM. And she has established the Brown STEM Girl, dedicated to empowering and educating girls of color. So I think it's terrific. I think it's a wonderful story.
That is very nice.
Yeah, and so, I like the idea of the online education, and many states accept it. And so if you've got a child who's not doing well in school, consider that if your state will allow it. Because here's a 13-year-old who graduated high school over a year ago in college right now, online with all this, and has already gotten into med school. So good for her.
Yeah, that, okay. And really, okay, that, I mean, online, that would take care of at least some of the in-person bullying and that
sort
of thing.
Of course. And there are many organizations that are dedicated to providing socialization. So you can join groups and all that for sports. And in many areas, the public schools have to accept the students for sports if they want to participate. So the idea that you're worried about socialization anymore, that's no longer necessarily true. Now, the other thing I liked, of course, talk about political correctness now. The Haunted Mansion at Tokyo Disneyland has removed Ladies and Gentlemen from the opening opening recording. So they've cut Ladies and Gentlemen because they want to be more inclusive. And I look at this and I think, why do you even speak about it? Because when you look at it, the English version doesn't say anything about Ladies and Gentlemen. It says, welcome, foolish mortals, to the Haunted Mansion. Just change it.
Yeah, in fact, actually just simply used the welcome, foolish,
exactly.
Foolish mortals.
Exactly. It's better, actually. Much better.
Yeah. In fact, okay, it's not even, it's an expression. Yeah. Basically, it's not explosive. It's not politically tinged. It just simply says, hey, whatever you're living, breathing, mortal, hey, you're
that's right. That's
you're
right.
In for a treat.
Yeah, you're on the planet, you count. Exactly. So apparently, Tokyo Disneyland and the Electric Parade has switched to good evening and welcome one and all. And apparently Walt Disney World has dropped Ladies and Gentlemen and Boys and Girls from the announcements in the fireworks show. Well, there are so many other ways to do it. Why do you make this a big deal? I don't know.
It's like somebody wanting to play around with word verbiage and like saying, like, for instance, you remember years ago they dropped the whole thing, actor and actress.
Oh, I know. Yes. You've ended the show, by the way. And let me mention that I guess Disney won because we've mentioned them six times in the last minute. So I guess we're the fools. Talk to you later. Thank you. All right. So on that note, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air. Bye. And John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. Tomorrow night, Steve Probst, 10 o'clock Central, right here on WGN Radio.